Okay. Do you want
to
start?
Oh, I get to start. Yeah. My goodness gracious.
What do you?
Well, I basically came here. So I came in September. And so within a month, I was sort of relieved of my duty, so to speak, as a student. But I was reinstated in relatively short order. So I'll just go through that. That was sort of interesting. So afterwards, I was, after every building had been cleared and whatever else, I expressed my displeasure with one of our, you know, police officers. And he expressed his by throwing me in a paddy wagon of sorts, you know. And I don't think anyone was arrested, but we were all, our names were taken and whatever else, and I was released, you know. So that was good. But then the next day I got to my dorm, which was Carroll Hall at the end of Carroll Street, which was part of a dorm at the time. And I got this notice. My goodness gracious, I was suspended. So anyway, so then, that I have never really paid much attention to attorneys or anything else, but Percy Julian, Jr., I guess, was the attorney here that decided to represent us. And his father was a famous industrial chemist, a black industrial chemist, which is very, very unusual. In fact, I think somebody did a documentary, filmed a documentary on his life. So again, very interesting in itself. And then various other folks got involved on that end. William Kunstler, whose daughter was attending school here, big leftist attorney in New York, basically represented us. And somehow we got back into school. So, but anyway, how I got there is at that point there was I didn't like napalm, and I didn't like Dow Chemical, or I didn't like a lot of things. I really. I didn't want to get in the way of anyone interviewing with them. So what they had when you went into commerce at that time, there were two halls, one going to Van Vleck, which was people supporting those blockading the interviews, which were held in the corridor going to Van Hise. So, but once the police came, it really didn't make much difference. They couldn't tell that the little moral niceties and ethical quandaries and different things. So they whacked us, went left and right, you know, whatever else. So then we got out of there, and one interesting thing, you learn about post-traumatic stress and all these various other things, and I can't say this is extraordinarily stressful, but the sound of breaking glass, which preceded the police coming in and thumping me on the head, was something that caught my attention for years afterwards, no longer. But for a while, for many, many years, just the breaking of the glass will have basically brought back memories of that that day and whatever else, you know. So so that was, you know, and then the other thing I remember, so then what do? As soon as I get the, you know, you're sort of in shock, or not in shock, but you're sort of, what do? So with a couple of my roommates and things, we went up to the square and went to a movie. I remember it was James Garner was in a Grand Prix movie of sorts, you know. So I went to that, you know, up on the square. And again, all these things come around. Because years later, I'm an architect now, we got the demolition permit to allow that movie theater to be destroyed. And, and make way for what's there currently, you know, Mullins Tower, I guess it is now. So, but anyway, that was my story of sorts. Then, of course, the bigger story is I came to school here thinking this would be my home, and that obviously never happened. You know, I never really returned to school with the enthusiasm that I came with. So it took me about 7 years to go through school. In which times I lived on the West Coast, traveled to India, did all these various other things, was a woodsman in Massachusetts, and all these other things. And if it weren't for the war, I would have probably just gone through here and I might be a professor now, but I'm not.
But you came back.
Oh, I'm here. Yeah, I came back.
Now, what compelled you as a college sophomore to go that day to the protest?
Oh,
and
well,
how were you?
Well,
one
there's
of the
two
13?
Things. I will tell you, there's two things. You know, one, when I was in New York, where I'm originally from, I had been involved a little bit in with some friends who were at Columbia, you know, protesting the war there. So it already had seemed. Not an awful, terrible understanding of why or what or anything else, but it seemed to be not going and killing somebody else for unclear reasons. It didn't seem to be that wonderful a thing, you know, and that became apparent to me. And I had already participated in marches and things, all march, you know, in New York. So that was one thing. What was the other thing? The other thing is very personal. So I had come here with the thought that after all this effort, I would get to Madison and it would be a transformative experience for me and all these various other things. And I actually found school academically somewhat disappointing. It was actually less rigorous because you're going through big classes, blah, 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 and less rigorous and less coherent than what I was used to growing up in New York, which is highly focused, very disciplined, very religiously oriented. But it's all there. So I found people more clever here, but not necessarily more wise. So I had two disappointments. And then I conflated, well, if this university, one of the reasons it's not wise, it's because it's being influenced and preparing people to work for the Dow Chemicals of the world. And that was obviously not wise. So I guess that was a confluence of the anti-war stuff and again, just personal disappointment in the university. So those were, I guess, the big things.
And how did you spend your time while you were suspended?
It wasn't that long.
Oh, it wasn't.
You know, again, I think it was just a matter of days. And again, it was a goofy defense. Is that you couldn't do double jeopardy or whatever the cause was. You couldn't be thrown out of, punished, you would be punished twice by being thrown out of school and going to being arrested, which in your scheme of things is the stupidest defense ever. But somebody blinked it. We were allowed back in. So anyway, so that was, and then...
Did you know any of the other 12 people?
No, I was good on campus for a month or 3 weeks. And again, many of the others were like grad students in various... Paul, I think, was head of the History Teachers Association, or History Students Association. And he was either a senior or a graduate student. And the other people were graduate students and things, you know. So I was sitting on Percy Julie, and he had a patio home of some sort, if I recall. And you're sitting on this patio with all these people, you know.
did that establish
not particularly. I mean,
like
not everyone was extraordinarily happy. I think one went on to University of Buffalo, and within a year he had taken a shotgun to his head. And, you know, not everyone was necessarily hunky-dory happy, you know. Evan Stark, I think, went down to St. Louis, and he says, you know, if you think students have problems, you know, take a look at, you know, people went their different ways. No, I can't say no. No.
Do you know any of them still?
Paul, you know.
Yeah.
But other than that, no.
Yeah.
No. I just came up here because my daughter thought it would be a cool thing.
Has she heard the story 100 times?
No, she hasn't heard it at all. Because what I'm getting to, my adopted from my father, I knew he was dying. The last time he spoke about his life was he was dead within 2 months. You know, that was always the way I was brought up. You know, I was not told anything about anything, you know, on either side. So it was always, there's something to do. There's always a new door to open.
So will you go home tonight and tell your daughter this story?
Well, she's working at an event tonight. She's working at the university still, you know. Yeah. You know, at the foundation. Though at some point, you know, we'll let things seep in, you know. I have to pass on something of my heritage, which is forward. Just like up on the statue.
Now, do you have any thoughts on the university's current stance about student, you know,
kind of... Oh, no, they think it's so totally goofy and different, you know. The students right now are wimpy, and they are, seriously, you know. You can't be a, you know, the Republicans say of the lack of entrepreneurship is because of the tax structure and everything else. You can't have kids that go are taken to soccer practice from... You can't organize their own games starting at age 4 and have them come up and expect them to take responsibility for their life. You know, basically, they're overprotected. It's not good. It's not good at all. We're not raising leaders. We're not even raising good followers. But again, that's another... there's real problems. I'm not alone in saying that.
No, no. Sure not.
But I fear for the life of the Republic.
And how has your experience on that day on campus kind of shared, and has it kind of shaped?
Well, no, you know, shaping my life, I think, is it just basically shook me, you know, from it was an irrevocable break, which may have been inevitable in any case. Here I was, Irish Catholic kid from, you know, very more or less traditional, you know, background, and I'm almost like an immigrant coming to Wisconsin, you know, which is whatever it is, you know, it's certainly not the ethnicity, or it's not the, you know, cohesiveness or anything else that you had in New York. Was you grew up in communities. It's a big city. But again, you grow up in extraordinarily tight communities, you know, and again, that was not Wisconsin, you know, so it may have happened in any case, but it was an irrevocable break that it certainly turned me for sure against ever university of my life, which it didn't, wasn't, I don't know, just a regular working professional type.
Now, do you think there's any connection between your kind of trajectory as an architect and building and this kind of idea?
Oh, no, I was far more influenced, because then you have to find your own road and whatever else. So then from this, rather than taking this track, you know, I grew up, well, you know, again, unlike today, where you find credentials, we assume success, you know. I was going to go to school, go to college, and then go downtown and have a job. You know, there was no question. You know, now it's a whole different, you know, story. What was I getting to? So again, all that went out the way. So I think I was more influenced by all the things that happened along the way. So this is a demonstration, several demonstrations later, when we were demonstrating against, you know, the ROTC campus. Torn down, and the police took out blackjacks, you know, and were lethally, unnecessarily, basically causing physical harm unnecessarily to students. I said, this is not for me, and I took off to the West Coast and, you know, did that, and then I, you know, whatever, this, you know, and then I was in the East Coast, and I traveled internationally, and I was far more influenced by all of that than this precipitated that, but this is sort of like the breeze that sets the seed. The seed would have landed elsewhere, you know, so.
And have you seen the Wartholm or Red David?
No, I just got that, you know, so we're going to look at it tonight. I got it from the library. Oh, I've never seen it, so.
Yeah, no, I wondered how you felt like captured the...
I haven't, I'll be able to better answer that tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome. Think of anything else, bring your daughter.
Oh, wow. You know, she has a whole different scheme of things, you know, but I was a little more restless.
Yeah. Do you have anything more you want to add?
I'm trying to think.
Yeah.
You know, I really can't say that, you know, that particular event probably was, again, as I say, it was a break, which would be, it happened more suddenly than slowly or whatever else. That's probably what I would say. But it did, you know, you do get cast aside, and there's so many different things that I wouldn't have done otherwise. I was a silk screen printer in Oregon. I was a woodsman in Massachusetts. I took the hippie quest, trek to India before it was really popular, and all these various other things, you know. But certainly my life has been enriched by all those experiences, which I would have not happened if I had gone to school maybe 2 years earlier.
Would you say your political activism has continued at the same
time? Oh, no. At this point, I've recognized, you know, the sum total of our efforts were probably negative, you know, realistically speaking. It was divisive, and again, we weren't, obviously, and then there's people were divisive against us, and that caused more divisiveness, blah, 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 blah. And we're not in the best of places at the moment. And I can't say that our actions are certainly help precipitate that and add to that. So I would not. So right now I haven't a clue what would wait. The temporary situation. So I made it my goal, and many of the same things that I still have, is I want to create a sense of community and all these various other things. But I do that through my work, which is I figure out, I don't know how to build a new America, but I can make America better one block at a time, which I've been fortunate enough to be given the opportunity to participate in. So this is all good, right?
This is all good. That's what we have, right?
So my political part, my activism, am I for Bernie Sanders or whatever? Probably not. I'm not against him, but I know the rallying and pushing people to one side causes somebody else to the other side. Blah 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 blah.
What do you think about the kind of subsequent analyses about the class struggle that was at play in the?
We were part of the class. I mean, we were part of that problem too. We were all upper middle class kids. and again, I had never one iota of shred of doubt, nor any of my colleagues had one shred of doubt that we would be successful. Despite our worst efforts, that's obviously a very privileged situation, something that kids today do not have, so I can't just say I was extraordinarily privileged, and I recognize, my father was in labor and everything else, so I still reach out. I hate the city. I mean, my political things are, I'm always in the stance of people with dirt under their fingernails, one-on-one, because the city hates people with, this is very nice to the homeless, but we have the homeless and the comfortable, we don't have very many people in between. The city hates people who work, or try to set up a business, that is dirty, and we need dirty businesses for recycling. Like right now, I'm working with somebody, and again, this is my activism, that He fixes cars. The car, it's very necessary, right? It's recycling. We're for recycling. Oh, yeah, we're for recycling. But as far as just fixing cars, it would be thrown out otherwise. But it makes a mess. And again, they told me, you know, wouldn't it be good, you know, he would be great in the village of Cottage Grove, somewhere outside of the city of Madison, you know, proper. So that's just things I do now. And then we fight to, like, down the street, the next block, our mayor at the time, Sue Bauman, who's a worthless nothing, she actually had a study saying there are going to be a maximum number of owner-occupied units in the east. Camp, you know, between the river and Camp Randall, are 15 a year. And therefore, we cannot allow Metropolitan Place and other condos to be built. So again, I'm involved in things like that to make certain that that occurred, because now that's full of all sorts of people. I think we have 3 judges there, or 4 judges there.
Yeah, and so you do see this work as activism.
Oh, that's my activism. I do it one block at a time, you know. One block at a time. But not, I don't go to any rallies. No rallies.
You weren't at Fighting Bob Fest.
No, I wasn't. I skip all rallies. Yeah, very much. I just get, again, it's the people talking to themselves, which I find them a little narcissistic. But anyway, so that's my activism.
Yeah, okay. It is activism. One block at a time.
Lots of blocks. Yep.
Okay, so I'm Liz Houck with James McFadden for the Dow 50 Project.
So yesterday I went through the personal, things of my experience on Dow. I was one of the people.
And do you mind if I just first get your name on this official recorder?
Oh, I'm James McFadden. I am James McFadden.
All right, this is Molly Blake, and I'm going to get the date on here too, since you chatted yesterday.
I was one of the people that was actually retained and suspended from school all those things.
So I'm just going to make sure the date's on here. It's October 19th, Molly Blake, James McFadden, part 2.
Yeah. So I was discursive a little bit yesterday in my thinkings, and I thought, am I leaving? As Woodrow Wilson was asked, could you come and speak at our club? And he says, yes, if you want me to speak for 2 hours, I could come right away. You know the whole story. If you want a certain concise whatever, give me a month, So I just came. But here, I wanted to give my reflections on this entire affair of everything. And my basic reflection on looking back on it was it was an ignoble experience, and actually a waste. And more specifically, what I thought, how it could summarize all this, when I came and arrived at this university, we were handed and people wrote and people discussed. We had 1, 2, 3 page position papers, well thought out, reasoned, documented. Some of them were completely wrong, but it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. When we left with wearing T-shirts with slogans on them. And I'm looking back from that point, we were certainly part of that slippery slope that led to presidents who tweet at all hours of the day and night.
What years were you at the university?
I came here in 67, so I came here in... whatever that year, 67, yeah. So I was here, basically I arrived within weeks before October 18th, mm-hmm. and it took me less than a month to get suspended somehow.
Mm-hmm. Were you suspended because of your involvement in
Oh, yeah, because I was mm-hmm. retained. So there were 13, no one was arrested, I think, you know, per se. None of us, because what happened is we were taken into a, or I was taken into a paddy wagon, and mm-hmm. it was so surrounded that the cops decided to just, you know, after taking my name and particulars, you know, mm-hmm. let me go. So I never saw the inside of the jail or anything else. But I don't think anyone else did that day either. So, but that was the whole thing. So I just wanted to come back. And looking back, all of these things, because now it's a time of recollection and reflection and all of this, the war was awful. No question. You know, our reaction to it was superficial, and none of us were able, were willing to do what was necessary. No one knew it was needed to be done, and we weren't willing to get out of our comfort zone, and all of it did was cause needless disruption and lower, certainly coarsen the level of discourse, which we're suffering with, you know, at this moment. So I can't say, I'm looking back on this entire thing. I wasted an awful lot of time. I wasted a lot of personal things. And I can't say that it did any good whatsoever. Any good whatsoever. So, but anyway, so I just wanted to put that on the record. All these people are gathering later this in June, or understand, and all these things. And some people will look back on this with fondness and whatever else, but you know, I really don't. And I have to say, when I haven't really thought about it, I've been fortunate enough to have a life that this, even my years spending protesting here or there and marching, this, that, and the other thing. No one you have to ask in anything, and this becomes the maxim of my life. You know, if you're going to do something, do it. So, and if you're going to make that commitment, you have to make darn sure that it's worth doing. Mm-hmm. So again, you have to pick out tasks that you have the capacity to actually influence and shape and whatever mm-hmm. else. And we were just whatever. I mean, Kennedy and whatever, Johnson, they were fools on a larger level. I can't say they were any more mature, but we certainly weren't mature in our response. So that's basically what I wanted mm-hmm. to say.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything you want to add, especially since you came back?
That's basically what I wanted to say.
And I don't know what you said yesterday, so I just wanted to say is,
you know, looking at all this, you know, it diverted me from one career path, which I would have probably been a scientist of some sort,
uh-huh.
you know, but I look at this as one large distraction. I allowed myself to be distracted by this, and instead of taking 4 years to go through school, I took 7, you know, and ended up in still a worthwhile profession. mm-hmm. But, you know, it was different, you know. So I would advise other people not to go on the protest march. And I have great respect for those people who, not necessarily my colleagues, but people who now ignore all the various protests and are focused on doing something, you know, that builds something. Because building takes patience, and it takes a certain degree of humility. I could be against evil, but I really can't do anything with evil. You know, I could be against something in the neighborhood. I might have some possibility of changing that. So you put your focus on that, you know, and it takes humility to say, there's all this evil in this world, you know, but I'm going to focus on mm-hmm. whatever.
The local. So I have a sort of related question.
Sure, ask a question.
You're kind of speaking about how one way it's kind of changed you politically is it made you decide to focus on local issues.
Yeah.
Are there other ways that your participation or your looking back on your participation changed you politically?
Oh, no. My politics is not terribly dissimilar.
Mm-hmm.
you know, I still think the war is terrible. I think, you know, not to say I'm certainly not, I understand there's wars that aren't and all that. But no, it's just made me, I actually looking back, at the time, I respected Lyndon Johnson. Lyndon Johnson decided, I'm going to sacrifice my party, the Democratic Party, and push forward on civil rights. And he was able to gather the votes and to do that, you know, an act of tremendous courage. Now, one of the costs was continuing the war. But I don't see very many people with that amount of courage or have built the necessary political capital necessary to actually to gather the people and do all that, because building anything takes time and patience and humility and self-abnegation and putting up with a lot of crap and going to a lot of meetings and listening to a lot of stupid people. And it takes all those things, which that's what we do. So I can't say my politics has changed enormously.
It sounds maybe like your view of activism has
changed. Oh, sure.
Would you say, with that, well,
your activism
it?
Is not getting out and patting myself on the back saying, you know, I am for internationalism. You know, it's basically you have to really devote a life to do something fairly, fairly specific, you know, for us to make a difference, you know. So it's, yeah, so I am an anti-activist. Yes, I would say that's probably true. And I'm against most isms, you know, so not that I'm unsympathetic, but I am against most isms because most of them are narcissistic and self-congratulatory. But anyway.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
I hope you don't believe in any isms, do you? Or don't take it personally.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
So you came that's
back?
All I
I really appreciate it.
That's all I wanted to say is to summarize this, you know, and give an overview.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming on back.